Welcome to today's edition of Front Porch Talks. I'm Grayson Willis. Today's edition of Front Porch Talks took place on Saturday morning, January 14th, here at Harrisonburg First Church of the Nazarene. It was part three of three parts of a live teaching session called Discover 301, Go Light Your World. And in part three of Discover 301, my dad, Pastor Kerry Willis, wrapped up the session by telling us about how we can be light and darkness to those around us.
We will convene the session now toward the conclusion, and I will do my best to complete on time. There is an article on prayer over here. Pastor Margaret will walk around with those if you'd like a copy of this article on prayer. I think it has Oswald Chambers. Yes. Is that the one? It's an article with some words taken from Oswald Chambers. And I want to add one thing to the last slide we had up there. It's already gone. Can we rewind back to the prayer slide? And I want not to add, but I want to multiply what Pastor Margaret has written here. The ministry of presence starts, continues, and ends with prayer.
Yes.
it really is. The whole thing is prayer. And a lot of times when I am spending time with a person, particularly because, you know, I believe God has brought me into their life to win them to Him, it feels like just a constant prayer. I feel like that I'm praying and they just happen to be there, you know. So prayer is the heartbeat, really, of presence is prayer. So I appreciate that sentence. And when I read it, I was challenged to say definitely it is the beginning of the ministry, but it also is the continuation and the conclusion when life is over. We're still praying. The other thing I want to say, I don't know how many of you saw the new movie, Ben-Hur. It's not new, but it was in the theaters recently. Well, I never saw the old story of Ben-Hur, so I didn't know what it was. And actually, it's a movie that takes place during the time of Jesus. It's the first movie about Jesus that I've ever seen where he wasn't the main character. But my, was he the main character. He had a supporting role in this movie. But the beauty of the movie is that it is a movie that shows longevity of a lost soul coming to Christ. And I will tell you, just if you see it, it'll be okay. If you don't, it'll be okay. There is a character who is, one of these people that were called zealots, you know. The zealots in the days of Jesus were those who were trying to overthrow the Roman government. We might call them today terrorists. They were trying to overthrow a Roman army with shenanigans, you know. They didn't have the artillery, they didn't have the power or the resources, but they were wreaking a lot of havoc on the Romans. They were trying to assassinate the leaders, all of that. That's what a zealot was. And the writers of Ben-Hur, they are artists, I tell you, and they paid attention. But they have this young man that shows up as a zealot early in the movie, and he keeps returning. You keep seeing him again, and you don't like him very much, you know? And I have to tell you, this won't ruin the movie for you, because I don't think most people even put it together, because they're not following this guy closely. He ends up being... Well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but he ends up being one that Jesus reaches in the movie. To me, it's the highlight of the movie, which some people would just see it as a side story, but I wept. You know, I wept when I realized what they had done with that story, that character, and how he met Jesus. So it does have a lot of violence in it. I don't, you know, it's a kind of a war-type movie, but being her in those days. To me, it's just... that storyline was worth the whole movie. It spoke to me about presence, evangelism, and this word that Amanda already quoted, longevity. I think too often we give up on situations and on people because things don't happen according to our timetable. Now, I wouldn't have known to tell you this 25 years ago because you know, you got to live a while to see longevity bear fruit. So what I'm going to attempt to do is, in the next 30 minutes, share a true story with you from my life. And I will miss some details because this is a pretty long story. But if you're going to talk about longevity, I guess you got to have something long. I grew up on a little island called Harkers. And everybody knew everyone. And sometimes it was a good thing, sometimes it wasn't. But more often than not, it was a good thing. I was playing one day with my friends, Jeff and Craig Paler, up at the west end of the island we call lovingly Red Hill. That is my stomping ground. And Miss Emma Lee was the grandmother of a couple other friends of mine, also distant cousins, Terry and Rodney Gomans. And their mother had left their father, and they were among the first two families I knew to have divorce in our little community. But Miss Emma Lee was becoming a mother to her grandchildren. She was the first grandmother I saw raise her grandchildren. And so she was always vigilant about Terry and Rodney and trying to figure out where they were. And she came up to Craig and Jeff's home, and she was backing out of the cement driveway, and she backed out in front of a motorcycle driver. And he ran into her, and an ambulance came, and he was laying flat on his back, and he was alive and all of that. He had a chopper, you know. He was riding an old chopper. And I asked someone, "Who is that?" And they said, "That is David Lawrence." He was about 8 or 10 years older than me. I didn't know him, but I knew the name. Here's the way I knew the name. When I was much younger, maybe 5, my grandmother had taken a meal to a family. Either it was a death or a hospital visit. I can tell you, don't think that's doing nothing when you take a meal, because the kids are paying attention. And I remember we went into the Lawrence home, and on the wall were these beautiful painted murals. I mean, the walls were murals of our community. I mean, like beach scenes and all of this. And I was mesmerized. I walked in, and I remember Mrs. Lawrence saying to me, "My son David painted all of these." And it was like the Sistine Chapel. The whole house was painted, and beautifully. I mean, the people looked real, and the horses, you know, the Banks ponies looked real. And it was just, and immediately I was like, "Who is this David Lawrence?" Well, then when I'm, you know, 10 or 12 years old, he's the motorcycle rider. So that was him laying on the tarmac there, the asphalt. And so David, you know, healed up. He went to the hospital and got well and all of that. And later I come to know kind of who he was. He was a sign painter in our community. That was kind of how he made a living. But he also had a lot of other skills, such as the folk art of decoy making and all of that. Well, when Kim and I were in photography, I bought a cargo van for my photo business, and I wanted to paint the sign on the side, you know, as a logo, a rolling advertisement. So I reacquainted myself with David Lawrence. I went to his home. Now, I'm an adult now, and he's an adult, and he doesn't know how I stand in awe of who he is and have since my childhood. And he freehanded my van. He painted both sides, and it looked like, it didn't look freehanded. It looked like the day's graphics. And I had the best van in town. I mean, every work person was envious of my work van. While we were doing that job, his daughter, Julie, she said, "You know, Mr. Carey, I've been thinking about you and Dad. You're a lot alike." And I thought, "Well, how is that?" She said, "Well, you both drive Fords." She said, "Second of all, you both have a boy and a girl." Our kids were really young. She said, "You're Wolfpack fans. And in your own right, you're both artists." You know, I did photography, he did painting. Something about Julie's suggestion, David and I looked at each other and went, "Wow, we might make friends." Now, there was one thing we didn't share, and that was that I was raised at the Free Grace Wesleyan Church, and he was raised through the fence, literally, at another property that backs up to the Free Grace Wesleyan Church, the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. And so we all had an understanding on Harkers Island because it was the largest church on the island, but we had 5 or 6 others that were Protestant. We understood that as Mormons and as, you know, mainline Christians, whatever, holiness people, that there was only a certain amount of depth we could go with each other in our friendship, in our relationships, because of our deep beliefs religiously. But David and I decided to put that aside and just decide to be friends. And we started spending time together here and there. Well, David started the Waterfowl Festival at Harker's Island. Have you heard of that? Okay, I go the first weekend of every December, and for 25 years, I have preached in a secular environment because David connected me to the waterfowl people. David only got to hear me preach one time, but he connected me in relationship because, I don't know if you know this, but Mormons are not supposed to go to Protestant services. That's part of what they're not supposed to do, but relationship can overrule all of that, and so can longevity. And just to tell you the end, the only time David heard me preach was the year before he would die. He said, I'm going to hear you before I die. And he came to that service. So that in itself is a longevity story, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. David came to our house one day at Tiffany Woods in Beaufort, and he had a little poster in his hand. And he said he was going to, he also had a job as a security guard at the state port. He took that job because he just sat in a glass house all day and painted. You know, he's a very smart man. And so he had this poster in his hand, and I'm not interested in waterfowl. I don't really care about ducks. I was a fisherman. I have time to duck hunt and all that stuff. But David came to me. He had a poster in his hand. It said, First Annual Decoy Festival, Harker's Island, all this stuff. And he said, Kerry, listen to me. Take this poster. Don't ever give it away. Don't let it get bent or broke. Frame it. One day, it's going to be worth a lot. I said, okay. So I framed it. I matted it. I still own it. And it's worth a lot. Because they only made 100 of them that year, and he gave me one. So I don't know. I could probably get $7,500 for the poster from the right person. But it's not for sale yet. So that day, I realized that, you know what, I didn't care a thing about ducks, but I cared a lot about David. And on that day, I learned some of the missionaries have to learn. The first thing you have to learn is to speak the language of the people you want to reach. And I realized that the language of David Lawrence was ducks. And that is where I got interested. Because the Lord had planted in my heart a desire to win David to the real Jesus. That's really all I can say. Because he's the best man I ever met in shoe leather. If you could go to Jesus on good works, which is what the Mormons teach, David would walk across water to heaven. I have never met a Christian who had better morals than David Lawrence. He was the best man God made, I think, just humanly. So I started talking through this lingo. So I said, well, I'll get involved some way. So I called my cousin Karen, who is now the curator of the Waterfowl Museum, many years later, and offered my services as a photographer. You know, can I do publicity? You know, how can I help? So I began to meet all these duck hunters and carvers and all this stuff. I wanted to learn the language. I wanted to be a part of the fabric. I was going to get myself in, and I did. And I became, you know, very good friends with a lot of these decoy folk. But the main reason was I wanted to talk the language. Now, I'm going to skip a lot of stuff, but I remember that I built a relationship with David and his wife, Carol, by just going to their home, just hanging out. At Christmas, I loved to go Christmas Eve because he was like an elf. He was painting stuff for people, and they would pick it up like daylight Christmas morning. It's still tacky and painted. You know, he was like an elf. And I remember one Christmas Eve before we went to Bible college, I went down and just to watch him paint ducks and stuff, you know. My kids were to bed. Kim was doing whatever. And I said, I'm going to go a couple hours at David's at midnight. I'd be down with him just watching him paint. And he looked at me and he said, do Grayson and Allison have everything they want for Christmas? And I said, well, pretty much. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, Grayson wanted a little wooden skiff, a little boat, you know, a little Harker's Island built skiff. I said, but we couldn't find one. He said, oh, what do you mean? Just a wooden skiff? I said, yeah. He said, well, get in the car. I said, where are we going? He said, my workshop. He had a workshop on the other end of the island. He quit everything he was doing, and he went down and went to his saw, and he built a skiff. And he said, how's that? I said, that's amazing. I said, thank you. He said, what do you mean, thank you? I got to paint it. He said, you come back in daylight, I'll have it finished. And Carol sat up with him all night, and she got to thinking about Allison. She said, now Grayson's going to have an extra gift, and Allison's not. So she made Allison a purse. Now, these are the kind of people they were. And the beautiful thing is that I need to go back on is I saw David one day in Walmart, sacred place. He came up to me, and we were talking, and I said, David, I've got this idea. I've written a story, a comic story, you know, a cartoon story about a character called the Blue Goose. I said, I tell it to my kids, and I've written it as a Christmas story. I want to put it together as a coloring book and have it made at the local press and give it to children at Christmas time. He said, well, tell me about the characters in the book. So I stood at Walmart in the toy section telling David about the characters in the Blue Goose story. And then I kind of forgot about it. Well, a few weeks later at my photography studio, I looked out the window. I saw his Ford pull up. I saw David get the briefcase out of the back. I saw him come in. There was nobody in the office that day. And he opened the briefcase and out flew the characters of my story, all of them. He had drawn them, illustrated them. He said, is this something like you have in mind? It was beyond what I had in mind. He said, well, give me the story. I'll do one for each page. And so we printed the Blue Goose Christmas story. Some of you may remember that coloring book. I shared it here. And that year in the local newspaper, it was a half-page article, friends write story, illustrate together. Ever since then, I called him the Blue Goose. He called me the Blue Goose. Last year was the 25th anniversary of the Blue Goose Christmas story. I reprinted it and gave it away to all the people at the museum. So that night when Carol said, I'll make a purse, when I went that morning to pick up that beautiful skiff that I inherited, by the way, yeah, from my son, I think it meant more to me than it did to him, the skiff, and also inherited the purse, he had painted the Blue Goose on the purse. And so Allison, that first Thanksgiving, after I had done the Blue Goose, she was watching Macy's Christmas Day Parade. And when the cartoon characters came by, in her imagination, she wasn't lying. She said, Dad, I saw him. I said, you saw who? I saw the Blue Goose in the parade. I mean, he was as real to her as Disney. You know, she thought he lived everywhere. So David and I created the Blue Goose. Well, they had a terrible tragedy in their family. The Mormons were not used to that, at least in our parts. One of their family members had murdered his wife. And they didn't think that was possible in their framework. And they didn't know what to do about it. I would go down every day and sit with Carol. It was her first cousin that had done this. And I would see it. And I remember one day, I was going, you have to outlast people in longevity. You have to be the last one standing in front of them when everybody else has left. And so I was there. The Mormon elders were there. The Mormon people were there, and I said, I'll just sit here and be quiet until they all leave. And they held themselves together. That's what religion does. You hold yourself together in front of everybody, because that shows strength. As soon as everyone had left the door, except me, David, and Carol, they both started weeping in front of me. And Carol looked at me and asked this question, Carrie, how do your people get through times like this? That was the first religious question I remember. But it wasn't the last one. And I never asked questions. I never brought up religion. But whenever they did, I tried to answer their questions as best I could. Now, during all this time, I have a call on my life for full-time ministry. We're selling house. We're getting ready to pack away, move to Colorado Springs. And David looks at me in 1990, and he says, and we're going to leave by 92, but we're starting to talk about it. So he says, I want you and I, before you take off wherever you're going, I want us to take a trip together to Chincoteague, Virginia. I never heard of it. I said, okay, I'll be glad to. He said, here's the deal. Will you drive your Ford Ranger and I'll pay for the gas? He said, we'll get a hotel. We'll split the bill. And I said, that would be great. He said, I want you to meet the hero of my life. His name is Delbert Segar Daisy. He is a world-class duck carver. He's the world champion two times over. And I want you to meet him. I don't know why, but I want you to meet him. And I said, it's great. Let's go. He said, one final request. I used to tell David Jerry Clower jokes.
And he loved them. And he said, do you have those Jerry Clower cassettes? I said, yes. He said, bring them. Let's listen to them. On the way to Chincoteague, I said, David, I need to warn you. Clower is a Baptist preacher who masquerades as a comedian. He said, well, we'll listen to him preach too. So we got in the car, and when he asked for the tapes, I plugged them in. Now, he's my elder, and I treat him that way. You know, I respect him. And we listen to Jerry tell the jokes, and when he gets ready to preach, I eject it. Because I don't want to push things on. He says, leave it in. So I had to leave it in. And he heard the gospel. And he was curious. He never heard the gospel the way that we share it. And so we were on like the bridge there, the tunnel, Chesapeake Bay Tunnel area. And we're in my Ranger. And David looks over at me after silence. And he says, Blue Goose, I got a thought on my mind. He said, you know, you're a Wesleyan. I'm a Mormon. One of us is wrong. I said, well, I've thought about that. Quiet. You know, we rode for a while. I didn't say anything. I just agreeing with him. He looks at me. He says, Kerry, how do you suppose we would know who is right and who is wrong? Now, I knew he loved my granny because she carried a meal there years ago, you know. I said, well, David, my granny says something about this word conviction. She says there's a conviction that'll come on you if you don't have the truth, if you're seeking God. And he said, well, how does that work? I knew, because granny had prayed it on me. I said, well, David, maybe you can't sleep, or maybe you can't eat, because you have your soul on your mind. You're concerned about spiritual things. He said, I think your granny's a smart lady. So we just went on. We went to Chincoteague. We got our motel. He had carried a hat with nothing on it because he wanted to paint me a logo of the Blue Goose. So I have a cap now hanging in my room, Blue Goose, holding a camera. You know, he wanted me to have something to remember the trip by. Well, the next day, we would go to Mr. Daisy's carving shack on the shoreline down there at Assateague Island. And I walked in very carefully behind David. I mean, this is a hero I'm getting ready to meet. He hadn't seen him in a little while. And so I'm coming along as company, also known as presence. We come in, there's a potbelly stove. Mr. Daisy's carving like crazy. I mean, his ducks are very expensive. He has one in that big museum there in Washington, like Barney Fife calls the Smith Brothers Museum. He has one there. He has them in the Ward, you know, the Ward Museum over in Maryland. And every duck he carves is already sold, you know, because he has a repertoire of customers. So we come in and David greets him and all that. David goes and sits behind the potbelly stove and I'm just sort of standing where I enter. There's a chair. So I just greet Mr. Daisy and sit down. Mr. Daisy pushes away from the table, looks at me. He only knows my name. He says, you are a man of God. I looked at David like, David, he said, Blue Goose, I hadn't even told Seagar I was coming. He knows nothing about you. I was puzzled because I'm going to leave in here in a little bit. It's a little year, so I'm leaving for Bible college. He's called me a man of God. I've already started preaching revivals. You know, it's a little weird. I said, what do you mean by that? And I tried to distract him. I said, look, Mr. Daisy, because I'm nervous about what's getting ready to happen. I said, I just came, you know, just to meet you. I said, you all are friends. You know, keep carving. He said, oh, I can carve later. Carving's not what matters. He said, I want you to tell me about faith. I looked at David. David said, tell him. This is his hero. I said, David, he said, tell him anything he wants to know. For the next hour and a half, I told Mr. Daisy about faith from Genesis to Revelation. Now, I'm a young to-be preacher. I got a lot to say. And David hears it all. This is the only time I ever was able to express my belief in front of David. At the end, I say to Mr. Daisy, would you like to put your faith in Jesus? He said, well, there's one problem. I don't have faith. I said, really? I said, now let me ask you a question. Before you sat in that chair you're in, did you turn it over and test the legs on it? He said, no, sir. I said, well, you got faith in a chair. He said, true. I said, do you by chance eat cornflakes? Honestly, I just guessed. He said, well, how'd you know I had a bowl this morning? I said, I did, and I was asking a question. I said, now this is Christ in me, if you haven't picked up on that yet. I said, did you put milk on them? He said, well, nobody eats dry cornflakes. I said, well, you have faith in milk. He said, what are you talking about? I said, a brown cow eats green grass, gives white milk. You can't understand it, but you poured it on your cornflakes and you drank it. He handed me a Sharpie. He said, write that on the wall of my carving shack, that cow thing. So I wrote it. And when I was done, he said, I just still don't have faith. He said, but pray for me, preacher man. Pray for me. And I promised I would. He didn't mean right then. He meant, pray for me. So that was the end of my conversation. And then it went back to ducks and decoys and all of that. Fun tales. And he got his name Seaguar because he used to be a poacher and they couldn't catch him. And he would leave Seaguar butts just to torment the fisheries people. So that's where he got. Now he's a conservationist. I mean, he changed. But he's quite a character. Well, when we got ready to leave, he looked at me and he said, I want to give you something to remember this day by. And the decoy head that he was carving, he turned it over and he signed it. Delbert Seaguar Daisy, January 5th, 1991, and he handed it to me. And when we got in the car, David talked like we do down home. Boys, he never gave me nothing. And I said, well, now I didn't know that when God gave me this, he was saying, this story's unfinished. I didn't pick that up. When I went home, I said, David, Seaguar gave me a head. I want you to give me one. David Lawrence, November 1991. Took him a while, but he did give me one. Well, here's the way the story goes. A few years later, it was like 97, David got deathly ill. He was only early 50s, but he needed a liver transplant that he never got. He was diabetic. And David was on his deathbed. And I came down for the decoy festival, and I'd already been told they won't let you in the house at David's. The Mormons guard their dying. They don't let you get close to them because they believe you could give them false doctrine or something and all this stuff. As close as I was to David, that separated us, you know. But before I left, my cousin, the curator, Karen, said, I think, Carrie, you might be able to get in. They might break the law down and let you in for love, you know, something like that. So it was about 9:30 at night, and nobody was home except David and Carol. And I decided I'll take a chance, and I knocked on the door, and Carol opened the door that far. And I saw tears in her eyes. And I said, Carol, I know I can't see David, but I just want you to tell him that I stopped. And she said, oh, Blue Goose, come in. If I don't let David see you, and he knows you were here, he will kill me before he dies. So I went in to the inner chamber, the bedroom, and David is laying nearly dead, but has all his faculties. He's laying in what he would call his whitey-tighties. I'm just telling you how David talked. He looked at me and he said, Blue Goose, crawl up here alongside of me. I promise I won't touch you. He was preserving my dignity, you know, as a man. And he looked at Carol and said, Carol, go to the living room. I need to talk to the Blue Goose. And in those moments, he said, Blue Goose, I'm going to meet my maker, and I have no peace. His father was the bishop of the Mormon church. He was the best man I ever met in shoe leather. But when it came time, he had no peace. And I said, David, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to pray. And I said, okay, David. Then my mind went back to the trip as we're there in the room. We came back from Chincoteague, and when we got back on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge area, David looked at me in my Ford Ranger, and he said, Blue Goose, I need to say something. You don't have to say anything back. You have slept like a baby on this trip, and I have not slept a wink. It was his way of saying, I'm convicted. And so I said to David, I said, well, David, you've told me a lot about how you believe, but it doesn't sound like to me that you know the real Jesus according to the Bible that I read. So now we're back in the room. He says, I want you to pray. I said, David, can I pray to the real Jesus? He said, that's who I want you to pray to. And I prayed the prayer for David, And he agreed with me. And when I was done, he looked at me in weariness and he said, "It's all well now. You can go." That was our last conversation. You're hearing a story most of the people don't even know down home yet. I will have opportunity to tell it. Now, the story could have ended there and it would have been good because I know I'll see David in heaven. I was there when he prayed the prayer. It was a longevity of presence that pulled it off. There was another story that happened along the way. Only God can get glory out of things like this, not me. His only son, Corey, overdosed while I was in Colorado Springs studying for ministry. And he was unto death. I mean, he was nearly, they thought he was brain dead. And the curator, my cousin, called me. She said, "Carrie, David is not good. Corey's going to die this week. They've already told the family he's going to die. He won't talk to anybody. But I think he might talk to you." She said, "He's standing by the payphone on the third floor of the intensive care, and I got the phone number of the payphone. Maybe if you call it, he'll answer it." True story. She hung up. I dialed the number. David answered. I said, "David," he said, "Blue Goose, my boy's going to die." Now, you talk about boldness. It better be Christ in you when you say things like this, because these aren't things I say. I said, "David, listen to me. Are you listening to me?" He said, "You know, I always listen to you, Blue Goose." I said, "Corey's not going to die." He said, "Well, I'm sorry, Carrie, but you're wrong. You're not a doctor, and they've already told me. He's already dead in my mind. I'm just figuring out how I'm going to do the funeral." I said, "Listen to me. This sickness is not unto death." He said, "Well, I'm glad for your confidence, Carrie. Thanks for your prayers, but you're wrong." Well, let me just give you the end of that story. This past year at the Waterfowl Weekend, Corey was the MC of the worship service. So when I got back later, I sat with David. He said, "You are the only person who told me Corey would not die. How did you know that?" I said, "I didn't. But somebody who did wanted to tell you through me." And I told him how scared I was when I had said that. But God showed him a few things along the way, right? So the story could end there, and it would be wonderful. And I'm still working on Corey. He's had a hard year. I drove down this past year to spend a night with him talking at the steakhouse because he's in a bad way. But I'm trying to do what David would tell me to do and what Jesus would. Now, the story could end there. But 21 years later, after that January 5th meeting at Cigar Daisy, in Chincoteague, Virginia. 21 years later, in 2012, the Lord brought Cigar Daisy to my mind. Now, Cigar Daisy is not my friend. I haven't kept up with him. But all of a sudden, I'm burdened for him. I told Ken, "Got to make a trip to Chincoteague. I got to see if Mr. Daisy's still living. I don't know if he is. If not, we'll have a vacation. But I have to go." So I went. I went to Chincoteague on this trip by myself. And when I went to check into the hotel, I got the phone book out and I looked up and there it was, Delbert Daisy, still had a phone number. I put it in my cell phone. I went to his home there right by that shack where I had sat out by the water. 21 years later, still there. This 50-some-year-old man is now 80-some years old. I go in the front door, knock, nobody answers, but I can hear a man that is talking but can't hear inside. So I called the phone from my cell phone. I hear it ringing in the front yard. He answers. I said, "Mr. Daisy, I'm David Lawrence's friend." He said, "You're not the one he brought here who gave me the Book of Mormon, are you?" I said, "No, sir." But see, the day we left Chincoteague, I said, "David, I need to go back by Mr. Daisy's." I gave him my Bible. I said, "No, Mr. Daisy, I'm the one who came with the Bible." He said, "Are you the preacher man?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in your front yard." He said, "Get in the house." So I came in. His wife's died. He's there alone. He sits at the table. I sit at the table. I said, "Mr. Daisy, I can't explain it, but the Lord sent me to see how you were." He starts weeping. He said, "Well, just a few weeks ago," he said, "I had a friend." He said, "Now, we were not involved sexually at our age, you understand. She was my companion. She was my friend. She drove her car in the woods and committed suicide. and I don't know what to do with it. I am so upset. I said, well, Mr. Daisy, I want to tell you a story. I said, about David. He said, how did things end for David? I said, well, that's why I'm here. He said, you know, always worried about David. He was hung up in that religious stuff. Such a good man. I said, Mr. Daisy, God used you. And on David's deathbed, because of what I shared with you, because of your curiosity about faith, I was able to lead him to Christ. He started weeping. God used me? I said, yeah. I said, Mr. Daisy, how are things with you? Do you remember that you didn't have faith? He said, oh, yeah, that's still in Sharpie out there on my shed. Right? Remember I had you write about the cow? I said, yeah. I said, how is it with you? He said, preacher man, I got faith now. Will you pray with me? And right there at that table, I prayed with Cigar Daisy, the legend. And he gave his life to Jesus. He said, well, I hadn't told you, but a couple things have been going on in my life. I said, what? He said, I have been going to church. He said, and would you believe my grandson has become a preacher? I bet they were thrilled to get the call. You know, I think we had worked on him together. You know, I just happened to be there. And he said, I got to ask you one more question. I knew it was coming. He said, now, preacher man, do you think Jesus would be upset with me if I just drank one beer a day? I said, Mr. Daisy, I ain't going there. That's between you and Jesus. He said, well, thank you. But we prayed together. He gave his life to the Lord. And after that, I kept checking on him. And Kim and I made some trips back and forth to check on him. Well, the last trip we made, before the last trip we made, he wasn't home. And his house is there and it's shut and everything. I thought maybe he died. So I went down to the decoy shop. You know, they would know. And they said, oh, he's in a rest home in Pocomo, Maryland. I said, really? So I Googled the rest home in Pocomo, Maryland. I called. I said, is Mr. Daisy there? They said, yeah. I said, does he take visitors? Oh, he'd love to have somebody come. So we drove to Pocomo, Maryland. I walked in. When he saw me, he smiled. We prayed. We cried. We affirmed his faith in the Lord. And this last trip we made, they said that he doesn't know anyone anymore. So I didn't go to confuse him anymore, but I had a great peace. Well, I will finish with this, and I am going to finish the story, actually. I'm going to go over 2 minutes, maybe three. Now, when I was with David, David was a carver, and my favorite duck is what we call back home a fishing duck. It's a dipper. And the official name of the duck, if you look it up in duck books, is it's a red-breasted merganser. And this is my favorite duck because they are around my island and plentifully. And this is the drake, of course. And so this is David Lawrence's drake that he carried around in his own briefcase, big briefcase, when he did demonstrations of Kincaid furniture. He would go to furniture stores. They had a line of Ducks Unlimited, and he was their artist. And this was the duck he carried in his case. And I ended up with this merganser. You know, I told the Lord, you know, sometimes you ask the Lord for things that you feel really bad about asking him for, but he already knows. So I told the Lord, I said, Lord, I'd like to have a Cigar Daisy duck, but I won't ever be able to afford one. It's not possible. Plus, you can't find them. And if you're going to get me one, Lord, I'd really like to have a hen merganser, you know, to kind of remind me of the story, you know. To get those two heads back together. They were not mergansers, but I wanted mergansers. Because that's the one he won world champion with, was a hen merganser. And that's the one that's in the Ward's Museum. I had prayed with Mr. Daisy. He's given his life to Christ and all that. Kim and I are leaving on a cruise. It's a pastor's cruise. I know it sounds pathetic, but it's a pretty good deal. And we were leaving out of Miami, and I was on eBay, you know, just looking around. And lo and behold, here comes a Cigar Daisy hen merganser. Well, it had just been listed. The reason I knew that was nobody had bid on it. That's how I knew. So I thought I'd take a chance. I mean, we're leaving the harbor. You know, I'm going to lose service here any minute. We're going out in the ocean. And so I emailed Helen from South Carolina. She buys a steak. She don't know what she's got. I'm not going to tell her. You know, so I emailed her. I said, Helen, I said, you got a merganser. She didn't know what it was. I said, you got a merganser. It's a duck.
it's got a little hairline crack in the neck, I said, which it does. I said, you've got it starting at $300. I said, I would be willing to give you $200 if you would pull it down because nobody's bid on it. And I'll just send you the money through eBay and you can sell it. She said, well, that's all well and good, except I really need $300. I said, okay, $300. She said, done deal. I'll pull it down in the next 5 minutes and put it back up as buy it now. You can buy it for $300. I need the money. I said, well, thank you. So just as you know how you're buffering and all that stuff and you're trying to buy something and it came through, sale complete. That don't mean much to you all. I understand that. But when I got home, lo and behold, I have the pair together now. This is a Seagard Daisy Hen Merganser. Signed and branded by the one only, and they sit together in my home office. And on those days when I wonder if God's paying any attention, if he's doing anything, it's like he says, my timing. I will bring to completion. He who began a good work in you will bring it to completion. Ye shall reap a harvest if you faint not. That's what today is about. If nothing else happens today except that you put your hope in the fact that those ones that you've given up on, God's not done with them yet, he could still come through and surprise you. Today I want to close in prayer. There's so much I left out, but thanks for allowing me to tell you why I believe in presence evangelism. Why I believe that if we learn the language of others and have all those conversations that, you know, I've had a lot of decoy duck conversations through the years that I acted really interested in. And I kind of am getting interested now. I kind of like ducks. But really what it was about was I want to earn the right to talk to them about something eternal. And I think God will honor that. Lord Jesus, today, I never had an opportunity to tell this story, even fast, with the illustrations in my hand. And I want to thank you today that I know that my friend David, who had all the religion a man could get, but only in a relationship in the twilight moments of his life. I'm glad today that I know that you came with the sickle and you harvest that soul in life. And Lord, to think that David had a desire in his heart for me to meet Seagard Daisy. He didn't really know what was going on. But I believe that David, even his religious state, was a seeker of your heart. He really cared about what God thought. And in some long story, you figured out a way to win him and where he could hear the gospel. And it took root. The seeds fell in good soil. And so, Lord, I thank you today for Mr. Daisy as he's there in the Pocomo rest home. And sounds like he has Alzheimer's. He can't remember a lot, but you know what? You haven't forgotten a thing. And you know exactly that day at that table on Pine Street in Chincoteague, when he looked at me and said, preacher man, I have faith now. Pray with me. And he put his faith in you. And I know that his eternity is secure. I pray now, Lord, that you will give us some Davids and some Seagars in the form of people. And that you would entrust us with souls. And that we would light our world. And that we would not forget that it's your presence in us that brings the hope of glory to those we encounter. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.